Think online political ads have the same rules as TV ads? Think again. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio. Tomorrow, it is Nevada's turn to take a stab at whittling down the presidential field. Nationally, political advertising in the campaign is expected to top $6 billion, mostly on old-fashioned TV. But as Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports, not all political ads are created equal.
Maybe last night you plopped down on the couch to watch the new episode of Grey's Anatomy on ABC. Or maybe you streamed it. Same show, same couch, same rules for political ads?
There are vastly different reporting regimes for broadcast television versus digital.
Erica Franklin Fowler co-directs the Wesleyan Media Project. She says streaming falls into the digital space, where political ads aren't always required to disclose who paid for them, because the Federal Election Commission hasn't updated internet ad rules since 2006. Erin Klopak with the Campaign Legal Center says that matters at the ballot box.
Knowing that it was paid for either, you know, by an environmental organization or an oil company really affects the way that people understand the interest behind that ad and what it really means.
eMarketer says about 70% of political ad spending will go to TV this year. But digital ads are growing because they can target hyper-specific groups of people based on where you are, what you buy, and yes, what you watch. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
South Korea has reported 48 more cases of coronavirus infection. Japan is reporting cases in unconnected areas, and China is revising its number of new cases. The total is up to more than 75,000 now. More than 2,000 people have died. There is also news that China's prison system has been hit. At least four facilities have been affected, with more than 500 inmates diagnosed with the virus, the BBC's Stephen McDonnell reports.
Senior officials responsible for China's prisons have already been sacked for mishandling management of the potentially deadly coronavirus. In Shandong's Renchong prison, where an officer was found to have been infected over a week ago, there are now more than 200 inmates and staff who've tested positive. A Zhejiang facility has dozens infected. Inside Hubei province, at least two jails have been hit by the virus, including a women's prison in Wuhan, where the governor has been dismissed for allowing hundreds of people to become sick.
Stephen McDonnell with our editorial partner, the BBC. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also down in the 0.3% to 0.4% range, with the Dow future down 91 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 1.49%. And the world's 12 largest investment banks made $147.5 billion in revenue last year from trading and investment banking. That is 4% lower than the year before and the lowest level since 2008. This is all according to Industry Monitor Coalition. 6% of workers in trading and investment banking were laid off over the year. Trading has become less profitable for banks as passive automated investing has become more popular and banks have shifted their focus to consumer banking and investment management. Lack of affordable housing is a problem in many American cities. High home prices, high rents, it's especially bad in major cities like New York and San Francisco, but not just in the U.S. London, Paris, Dublin all face similar challenges. But one major international city does not, at least not as much, and that is Tokyo. Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has been taking a long look at this problem, trying to figure out what we can learn from Japan's largest city, which for reference has around 9.2 million people, about 600,000 more than New York. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning.
Fundamentally, insanely high home prices and insanely high rent in big cities, that's a supply and demand issue, right?
Yeah. Cities attract lots of people looking for a job, and the supply of homes and apartments just hasn't kept up with demand. So your classic supply-demand pushing up prices. And for example, two Harvard University economists, they looked at land use regulations and zoning rules in places like New York, and they saw, you know, these strict rules are highly correlated with high prices for living space.
Yet Tokyo is somehow different. How?
Yeah, Tokyo is fascinating because it's like other major cities, but over the past two decades, prices in Tokyo have been relatively stable, while prices have soared in places like San Francisco and New York. Mm. Now, I want to make clear, Tokyo's expensive, but for the past two decades, prices have flatlined.
So how did that happen? What is the lesson there?
It really comes down to politics. You had major legislation in 2002, and it really relaxed a lot of rules and regulations. They have a very simple zoning system, and it allows for the technical term is by right development. So that means a priority is on encouraging higher density multifamily housing with sort of uniform, consistent zoning regulation. So as one economist put it, if you want to knock down a townhome and replace it with a six-unit condo building, your neighbor may not be happy, but there's not much your neighbor can do about it.
It sounds like then rising home prices are not inevitable, but there's some trade-offs.
That's the thing. You don't have to have the high home prices, but you do have to confront these trade-offs. So, for example, if you live in Brooklyn or you live in New York City, you know, think about the famous brownstones where they all come down and you put up multifamily housing. San Francisco, same thing. The beautiful townhomes, would they come down? The other thing that comes out of looking at Tokyo is the national government controls essentially your land use policy, so you have less of the not in my backyard movement. So these are difficult things to think through in the U.S. Because we have these land use regulations, we are getting these high and rising prices.
I mean, governments are under pressure to do something. Is there anything that they can do?
I think the lesson of Tokyo is this. Supply really does matter, and you're going to have to increase the supply of housing. And that is very difficult in an economy, the United States, where housing is still really built around the single-family home.
Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell, pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producers are Miguel Contreras and Alex Schroeder. Our engineer is Jay Siebold. Our fellow is Erica Soderstrom. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.